91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. If you belong with those who feel terribly overwhelmed and confused when it comes to computers, pads, smartphones, clouds, hashtags, or even memristors, you might want to crank up the volume. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. We'll visit with popular technology writer David Pogue for tips and insight that makes the mystifying terribly obvious. You can have 15 different voices read to you on the Mac, even an 8-year-old. It's easy to solve innumerable problems of any sort simply by watching YouTube. You can read Kindle books without a Kindle, and one needn't be drowned in spam. We'll learn more from Pogue's basics after the news. And it is today's Topical Currents, Tuesday edition. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. And today we feature renowned technology writer and blogger, David Pogue. He's published a splendid collection of hints and tips for using the devices we live with called Pogue's Basics. Tech wizards assume blokes like me know the ropes around PCs, Macs, smartphones, and the internet, but usually most of us retain very little.
And David Pogue,
as you well know.
Yes, I was going to say I was surprised to hear that blokes like you, people thought blokes like you knew. All right. Well, David Pogue was the New York Times weekly tech columnist for 13 years. He's also given 4 TED Talks, has launched Yahoo Tech for Consumers, writes for Scientific American, and is seen regularly on PBS and CBS Sunday Morning. And David Pogue, all that intro, joins us via Skype. Hi, David Pogue.
Hi, thanks a lot. That intro makes me tired just listening to it.
Yeah. So I have to tell you, I was so excited to learn so much reading your book. I want to thank you for that. I think the people around me got a little tired of me hearing, did you know that? But my question is, how do you know all this stuff?
Well, I mean, I've been explaining technology to laymen for my entire career. I mean, this is what I started out doing. I used to write the dummies books, blah 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 for dummies, and then I started my own computer book series called the Missing Manual series, and then I, you know, wrote for a general audience for the Times for many years, and perhaps more importantly, I began my career making house calls to teach people their computers in the late 80s, early 90s, at the dawn of the computer revolution. So I'm not that much of a technologist. I've never taken a computer apart, but I do have a pretty good sense of what's confusing to people. And these days, the central problem is that we're bombarded by features and products, and there's no manuals. There's no one there to say, it's okay not to know 95% of it. It's just featureitis. It's bloated. It's too much. But here are the 10 things you really need to know to get by.
It reminds me of my elderly stepfather when he first got email. I received about 40 and said, is this working? Is this working? Is this
working? Well, David, when you say that you made house calls, in what capacity? Who were you working for? Did you just advertise and just say, I can fix your computer, or I can tell you about your computer, rather?
I never did advertise. It was it actually turned out to be largely a celebrity-based business. I was living in New York, as were a lot of movie stars. So Hollywood directors and Broadway composers and TV producers, they tended to be my clientele, just from, you know, word of mouth, because they all socialize at the same parties. Well, I got a kid who comes over and he teaches you, you know. So it was a lot of very fancy apartments on Central Park West.
It seems one of your big goals that you express in the book is to leave your hands on the keyboard as much as possible, not to be mousing around so much, almost like the early 80s before there were mice or mouses.
It's true, in the sense that every time you move your hand between mouse and keyboard, two things happen. One is you're losing your your flow. You're losing your momentum. And second of all, it's a shift. It's a mental shift of modes and how you're doing it. So I'm not proposing we go back to the days of memorizing keystrokes. Oh, that's alt, ah, shift, 7 ampersand. But there are some super basic
that
keys.
Was shift, wasn't it?
Yes, it was shift.
Shift, yes. That's Skype doing that, by the way. But there are certain things that really people aren't using enough. You know, for example, the escape key, the ESC key at the upper left corner of every keyboard. There are people who don't realize what it's for and what it does and how it can save you time. So this is a classic Pogue's basic. It's something staring you in the face that's always been in your control. So it closes anything on the screen, a message, a menu, a dialog box. If you're in a YouTube video that's full screen, the ESC key makes it exit full screen and go back to normal size. So it always means back out of this or duck out of this, close it, say no, go back. And since it's right there by your left hand, which is not on the mouse anyway, it's a very handy one to learn. And speaking of YouTube, by the way, here's one that's really not practical with the mouse. Navigating a video that you're watching, very few people are aware that the number keys on your keyboard, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, they represent percentages through a YouTube video that you're watching. So 5 is 50%, 9 is 90%.
So, wait a minute, you lost me.
Okay.
80%.
You're watching. First, let me start with the golden rule of YouTube videos, which is the good stuff always begins 30% of the way into the video.
Okay.
So a lot of people want to skip the introductions, the title cards, the setup. They just want to get to the meat. So it turns out that you can press the number 3 on your keyboard to jump to the 30% marker of the video.
Got it.
So the 3 represents 30% of the way in. The 5 represents 50% of the way in. And in that way, and it's worth knowing the L key too. L skips ahead 10 seconds. That's also really useful. So if the person in the video is saying, and by the way, a funny thing happened to me at breakfast.
So you just press the L key and it'll skip 10 seconds?
That's correct. And hardly anyone knows that.
Well, let me ask you something. Why is there someone that doesn't want us to know? I mean, that's not the case, is it? Why don't we know these things? And short of getting your book, which, you know, I'm not saying is a bad thing to do, but why don't we know these things?
Well, that's an extremely astute question. This is why you're in the job you're in. And it's one I put a lot of thought into. It turns out it's not deliberate. It is, though, a failure of the way the technology industry works. And the way the tech industry works is when you buy anything, a phone, a camera, even a piece of software, it's not like you're buying a candle or a hairbrush or a chair where the transaction is done and you own it, right? Instead, it's more like you're joining a club with annual dues because they're going to come at you next year with a new version, a better version, with more features. And this is hardware or software. You know, I mean, Verizon's slogan used to be new every 2. They advertise the fact that you're supposed to jettison your phone every other year. So how do they compel you to want to buy another new thing next year? The only tool they have is to pile on features, to add new features. And after a certain point, it gets absurd. I mean, Microsoft Word used to be a word processor. And now it's a, you know, it's a web design program and a database and a floor wax. So it's these things grow out of their shells and become overwhelming. There's no possible way for the average person to know it all, to keep up. I would bet even the product managers for these things are no longer able to keep on top of all the features. So anyway, the answer to the question is it's a complete breakdown between the way the economics of the business works, which is to keep selling you more features, and our ability to keep up. And by the way, there's also no manuals with any of this stuff anymore.
And even if there were, most people don't read them, right?
That is correct. That is, in fact, why they stopped making manuals, because their studies show that we don't read the stuff. So everybody's at fault.
Seeming ridiculous, research shows that many users don't know about right-clicking.
This is true, especially in Windows, but also on the Mac. Right-clicking is the key to a lot of features, a lot of important functions that don't even exist in any other way. But many, many people don't know that if you're trying to figure out, how do I delete that thing? How do I make it bigger? The answer is almost always lying under the right mouse button or the right button on your trackpad of a laptop. It's extremely worth knowing. And I think Microsoft found out that some huge percentage, maybe 37% of people, did not realize that there are functions hiding under the right click.
And also, some people don't even realize that they can use the tab key to jump around in forms when you're filling out your name, address, phone, zip code, and that.
Right.
That seems pretty hard to believe.
Well, oh man, you would be surprised. So the tech site that I founded a year ago at Yahoo is called Yahoo Tech. That's what I left the New York Times to build. And I've been making 30-second Pogues Basics videos. And they cover things like, did you know that tapping the space bar when you're on a web page or an email scrolls down one screen? So it saves you from, again, using the mouse. You just tap the space bar to scroll down and add the shift key to scroll back up again.
When you say add the shift key, because I tried doing everything and so much of it worked, but you mean when you're scrolling down, you hit the space bar to scroll down. To go back up, you keep the space bar and then add the shift key?
The other way around. So you press you hold down the shift key like you're about to type a capital letter.
I see.
And then hit the space bar and you'll go back up again.
Okay.
And good for you for doing the research.
Yes, yes.
She's got her Mac in front of her now.
I do, which, by the way, we have to take a break. I'm going to have to hold that question. We're going to also involve our listeners. We're talking to David Pogue. He's an author and award-winning tech expert. He's written Pogue's Basics. And let's take that break on Topical Currents. We'll be right back.
And we return 19 minutes past 1 o'clock. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and David Pogue on today's Topical Currents. David is a well-known technology writer and blogger, and we're talking about his new book called Pogue's Basics. If you'd like to join in with a question, or perhaps you have a unique tip to turn us on to, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN if you'd like to speak with us. Now, please, no long-winded, very involved tutorials here, just kind of an in and out for our callers, okay? Everybody's got that right.
Okay.
Bonnie, you had a question?
Yes, it's a long tutorial. No, the question is, before I ask my specific question about OS X Yosemite, do we have to update all those software updates for the iPhones and the operating system updates for the Macs? I mean, do we have to do that?
Technically, no, but practically, yes.
Okay.
So the problem is that over time, more and more of the things that you use, the software programs, even the hardware, will require non-obsolete operating systems. So they really have you. I mean, you don't have to upgrade right away. In fact, it's usually not a good idea to upgrade right away when some new Windows version or Mac version comes out, because you want to give them some time to get the bugs out.
Right.
But sooner or later, you're going to have to. Every year I hear, you know, I'm running a 3-year-old operating system and my new fitness band won't work with it. What am I supposed to do? Well, you have to upgrade.
Okay, so this OS X Yosemite, what can I do on my Mac that I couldn't do before it?
Well, so every year Apple, in keeping with that last question, comes out with a new version of the Mac operating system, and the new one is called Yosemite. And I mean, there's 200 new features, but my favorite by far is the Mac and your iPhone or tablet they now work together. So the Mac is now a speakerphone using your cell phone lying somewhere else in the house as an antenna.
Okay.
So you can actually make and receive phone calls, send and receive text messages from your laptop, which is something that we haven't been able to do before.
Are you okay, David?
Yeah, am I breaking up?
No, we just had sound some interference.
Like there
interference.
Was a wrestling match in your room.
Oh, sorry, some people are arriving. And for my column this week, I'm testing 3 4K TVs, these new super high resolution ones, and the delivery is right now.
so that's pretty cool. You get all these things, and you just have to poke around with them and find out everything about them.
Yeah, I don't get to keep anything, unfortunately.
Oh, you have to send them all back. Okay.
Yeah, it's just a temporary review loaner. But this one's fun because we're being told, again, with this idea of constantly adding features, we're being told that 4K television is the next realm, that we need to see our shows with four times the clarity of high definition. So in my column for Yahoo Tech this week, I'm going to find out if that's a bunch of marketing baloney or if that's real.
I mean, right now with the HDTV, you can see the fillings in people's teeth. How much more detail do we need?
Now you'll be able to see the molecules on the fillings.
Let's see. Georgia wants to know how to spell your name so she can buy the book. You can spell it. Go ahead, David.
Sure. Well, that's an excellent question. It's Pogue, spelled like Vogue with a P. So it's P-O-G-U-E. And by the way, if anyone is interested in the book or seeing a video of my presenting 10 of these essential tips at poguesbasics.com, we've posted my TED video. Actually, I gave one of these TED Talks on this topic a couple years ago, and that is actually where the book came from. I was astounded to see how loudly the note resonated with people. That video has had 4 million views now, and everyone keeps writing me to say, do you have any more? Do you have any more? So that's the video that started it all is at poguesbasics.com.
Well, we're going to go over all those things too, but first we want to ask our listeners, if you have a question about your PC, your Mac, your iPhone, your Android, your iPad, or any other tablet, or what about Facebook and Twitter, you can call us 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. We have an expert on hand, or you can email radio@wlrn.org.
David, how many more of life's simple operations are going to go digital? In your book, you talk about a digital fork, which with an app can prevent you from eating too quickly. It warns you on your phone.
That's right. It's called the Happy Fork. I reviewed this thing, $100.
$100.
$100 for a fork. And your phone is lying there beside your plate, and if it senses that you're shoveling food too fast, the phone screen goes red and it says, "Bam, slow down."
I guess if you've been in prison, you might need that.
By the way, do Macs need virus protection or not? I always hear conflicting opinions about that.
I wouldn't bother. No, I'm a Mac guy myself, and I've never had one. There has been the occasional Mac virus reported, but there's never been an epidemic. There's never been a widespread one. They're pretty secure. So in my experience, it's more trouble than it's worth.
But what if you get an email that contains a virus that has nothing to do with your Mac, but someone else's computer?
Well, usually people on Windows used to get, and Windows is more secure too now, by the way. But it used to be that you'd get a virus on Windows by double-clicking an attachment that came from a stranger. And that attachment turned out to be the evil virus installation program. So if you get one of those on a Mac, it won't run because it's a Windows program. So it just won't do anything. So best bet is don't download illegal stuff from the web, and don't double click attachments from strangers. If you're on a Mac, usually those things don't run anyway. But even if you're on Windows, those are the pieces of advice. I know people who have no virus protection software on their Windows machines simply by following those two rules. A virus cannot just install itself. You have to click something or double click something to open it.
Okay, so let's do those essentials that you do on the TED Talk, but let's do them a little more slowly than you do on the TED Talk.
Sure. For example, when your phone is ringing at a bad time, you're at a concert, you're in a movie, you're in church, don't be that idiot who fumbles the phone out of the pocket and enters the password and tries to shut it up. You don't have to do that. All you have to do, I kid you not, is reach into your purse or your pocket and squeeze the phone. Squeeze the phone with all your fingers, because what happens is any of the buttons around the edge of your phone will silence the ring, like the power, the volume, the sleep, the camera. Any of those buttons will silence the ringing. So if you just squeeze the phone, you'll hit one of those buttons and stop the ringing. It works. It's beautiful. And no one will ever know who had forgotten to turn their ring.
Right. Okay. There's one. You know, the tab, the space bar.
Yeah. I love, well, on a smartphone, like an Android phone or an iPhone or even a BlackBerry or a Windows phone, when you come to the end of a sentence, most people fish for the period key, which on the iPhone is on a different keyboard screen. And then you put a space, and then you have to capitalize the next sentence. Actually, you don't need to do any of that. When you come to the end of a sentence, hit the space bar twice. And what that does on a smartphone is it creates a period, a space, and a capital next letter, all automatically. Just hit space, space, and it's done.
Okay.
It saves a lot of fussing.
That's a great one.
Yeah, I love that one. I'll tell you the one that started really my thinking process years ago. I was in a waiting room to visit a publisher, and I noticed this like 24-year-old receptionist trying to highlight a word in an email or a word processing document, and she was trying to drag across it with her mouse. And of course, she would go a little too high or a little too low and accidentally highlight the whole line above it or the whole line below it, and it was making her really frustrated. And I just couldn't stand it. I jumped up and said, "You know, don't you, that you can just double-click the word to select one word?" And she's like, "Oh my God, I never knew that." So you can double-click one word to select just that highlight word, or you can triple-click to select the entire paragraph neatly. Just go click, click, click. And then that paragraph is highlighted, ready to copy or paste or bold or whatever.
Because if you don't do that, you're trying to highlight between a comma and a word. And
right, right.
Exactly right. So they've thought through. They thought that ahead of you. Let's see. I love this one. It turns out that the selfies are a big thing, taking a picture of yourself. But the problem is the camera, the phone, can only be arm's length from you, right? So on the iPhone or the iPad, the earbuds – the white Apple earbuds cord has a clicker on it, usually used to pause your music when you're listening. But when you're in the camera app, that clicker button is a shutter release. So you can set up your iPhone 3 feet from you now, up on a mantelpiece or a crook of a tree, and trigger the shutter with your earbuds cord. Hmm. Nobody realizes that. That's a pretty cool one.
And do the camera one too, the regular camera.
Yeah, this one will get you free drinks. I was at a swimming pool somewhere, and there was some dad trying to take a picture of his kid jumping off the diving board, and he would hold up his little camera and click the shutter and miss it every time. And the reason he was missing it is because every camera needs a half a second to focus and calculate the exposure before it snaps. That's called shutter lag. And it drives novices crazy. It's like, why doesn't it take the picture when I press the button? So it turns out you can eliminate shutter lag by half pressing the shutter button in advance. So as the kid is approaching the end of the diving board, half press, you'll hear the camera beep, but it hasn't taken the picture out yet. Then when the kid jumps, fully press, and you take the picture with zero lag. It's really pretty great.
Yeah, that's
so
a great
half
one.
Step gets you your focus and exposure.
Right.
And a free drink. The dad said, "Wow, I love that. I never knew that. Let me buy you a drink."
Okay, do some more.
Well, it's important for people to realize that if you lose some files on your camera's memory card or your computer, it's not gone. It's not gone. There are $30 shareware programs and even free programs that let you recover things you've deleted by accident. So the important thing to know is stop. If you delete something by accident and you're hysterical, don't do any more work on that computer or with that memory card. Because if you do, you might save some new files onto the storage in the exact spot where the deleted files were, and then you can't recover them. So stop what you're doing, get one of those programs, and you can then recover them.
Okay, let's just take a few moments to say this is Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and David Pogue. He is an author and award-winning tech expert. If you have tech questions, and his latest book is Pogue's Basics, Essential Tips and Shortcuts That No One Bothers to Tell You for Simplifying the Technology.
Since we were on the photos, how about resurrecting deleted files?
Yeah, it's the same thing. If you delete files from your computer by accident, there you have three levels of safety. First of all, of course, on a Mac or a PC, even if you put them in the trash can or the recycle bin, they're not really gone. They're still there until you empty that. Secondly, even if you have emptied the trash or the recycle bin, you can still recover those files using those programs I mentioned. And thirdly, even if it's been a while and your hard drive fell into the toilet or it's gotten rained on, even if it's really trashed, for a lot of money, you can send it to a company like Drive Savers, and they have a 97% success rate at recovering even badly damaged files and missing files. So all is not lost if it's really, really important.
Okay, Clay says he's mortified to admit he still has hundreds of contacts on an ancient Palm device, a Z22. Neither I nor any of several computer shops and teenage boys I have tried have found any way to get them onto my shiny new Galaxy. Is it too late? Is this a real situation if you can't get there from here?
It is not too late. While you were talking, I went to Google and typed in rescue contacts from Palm desktop. And okay, sure enough, there are the steps for exporting your contacts from the Palm Pilot. Now, if it's on the Palm Pilot, but you have not synchronized it to your computer, in other words, if it doesn't exist on the Palm Pilot desktop software, then it's a little trickier because the export command is the one on the desktop software. But even so, I'm seeing lots of tips online for how to keep contacts from an old Palm. All is not lost.
So where are we on the top 10?
Oh, yeah, where are we? Yeah, no, we still have more on the top 10.
Well, here's one that so of these 30-second videos I've been putting on Yahoo Tech, I'll tell you the one that got the most traction, the most interest. It really surprised me. It is what to do if you get to a hotel somewhere and you realize you didn't bring your charger. You're missing the charger for whatever it is, a laptop, a phone, a tablet, for whatever it is. What are you supposed to do? Well, the tip is that you're not the first person to leave your charger behind. Hundreds of people have been at that hotel and left their same chargers behind, and you will find them in a box at the front desk. So you go to the front desk, you say, I forgot my iPhone charging cord, can I borrow one? And they will bring out this lost and found box of chargers, and the one you need will be in there.
That's a great one. Now, talking about losing battery power, you have ways that we can, you say, you know, so you don't have battery power by the time you finish work. So what do we do to maintain, to prolong our battery life?
Yeah, it turns out that there are certain things that drain the battery the fastest on your phone. And isn't it interesting that our technology has come so far, and yet we still worry about batteries running out? It's amazing that the battery technology has not kept pace. But anyway, the number one user of battery power is the screen brightness. That's up to 50% of your charge is the brightness of your screen. So if you can afford to dim it down, you'll get a lot more juice. Another huge one is many phones come set to check for email and software updates all the time. They're constantly checking behind the scenes. This, by the way, is why people come home from Europe with their iPhones or Android phones to a $6,000 phone bill. Because they didn't realize that those roaming charges are insane. And they're like, but I didn't use my phone in France. Well, guess what? The phone was using itself. It was checking for updates, checking for Facebook, checking for Twitter, checking for email. So in any case, the way to work around that is to go into your settings and turn off the constant checking for email. If you can stand to have it check once every half an hour or something, you'll save a lot of juice.
Now, where is that in the menu?
Settings.
So settings. Yeah, under settings on both iPhone and Android phones, you have under your mail settings, you'll see that option. Mm-hmm. And if you are going overseas, for God's sake, put your phone in airplane mode while you're over there, so you will not return home to the $6,000 phone bill, unless you have T-Mobile. T-Mobile is free overseas, so you're okay there.
Oh, there's another good one that you do. How to bypass the message, the outgoing message. But
yes.
But then you have to know the provider.
This one makes me crazy.
I know. Okay, tell us.
Okay, so you call to leave me a message, and you get my voicemail. And first you hear me. Hi, it's David. Leave me a message. And then you get 15 seconds of instructions put there by Verizon on how to leave a voicemail. You know, you may begin speaking at the tone. When you have finished, you may hang up. No. I never knew.
That's like how to use a seatbelt.
Yeah, exactly. Well, with one difference, and that is that you're paying for the airtime. You pay for your cell phone by the minute, many of us do. So anyway, all that those messages are there just to burn up your airtime and cost you money. I did the math. Verizon has 130 million customers in the United States. If they're on the standard plan and they get that recording twice a day, a business day, that comes to $785 million a year they're making from us listening to those stupid instructions.
Okay.
So, yeah, so the tip is that you can bypass that message as soon as you hear it start by pressing a certain key. As you noted, the problem is that it's a different key for each of the major cell phone companies. If the person you're calling has Verizon, it's the asterisk. If it's Sprint, it's the number one. And if it's AT&T, it's the number sign, the pound sign. And T-Mobile, by the way, does not play that recording. So once again, T-Mobile is the hero here. But here's – so obviously you're supposed to know which cell phone carrier that person uses, which is impossible. So what you do is you press the three keys in sequence, one, star, pound. So if you can remember, go one, star, pound, then whatever carrier they have, you'll jump directly to the beep and you can leave your message.
Although sometimes when I'm trying to bypass an email, a message, and I have the wrong carrier, let's say I hit the pound key and it's actually Verizon, it says, please enter your password or your...
Yes, that's right.
Right.
That's why you don't want to go... star, pound, one. You have to do it in this order, one, star, pound. Pound should be the last one you do so that you don't enter their – because that's the one that you usually use to enter their menu system. So go one, star, pound.
Okay.
And by the way, if you want to fight back against the tyranny of these obnoxious carriers, leave that instruction as part of your greeting. Like, hi, this is David. Press star to jump to the beep.
Right.
Let's start a movement.
Yes.
Let's take a call or two. We've got Peter in Miami. Hi.
Hey, David, I'm a big fan of yours.
Oh, you're so kind.
I had a question about security and passwords. I've tried the different keychains and different ways of securing lots of different passwords for lots of different websites. And I don't want to have the same password across all of my websites. So I have, I don't know if it's a question or a tip, but what strategies do you use for using all different passwords?
So I actually have had good luck with the password keeper programs that you're describing. They're called things like LastPass and Dashlane. And then if you're in the Apple ecosystem, Apple has their own one that's free. It's called iCloud Keychain. And what that does is two things. First of all, it memorizes your passwords. And that's across the Macs and the phones and the tablets. So they're all synchronized. You never have to enter a password ever. And secondly, it makes up a password for you that's different for every site and very complicated. You know, asterisk, L, dollar sign, whatever. And you can't possibly remember that, but you don't have to. It's going to remember it for you. So that is precisely the strategy that I use. And yeah, as you noticed, there are probably a few non-standard sites that don't autofill. And for those, I just keep a list on my computer of the ones that don't work.
Yeah. What I've been doing is I have my secret password that I'm not going to share with you. And then I take, you know, the first three letters of the website. So, and that way every password's different. But easy for me to remember.
Yeah, that is a great suggestion. It is, in fact, in the book, Pogue's Basics. So what you do is, first of all, the password itself should not be in the dictionary. So a really great way to do that is to think of a sentence like, I would love to have $25 million. And that's easy to remember. And you take the first letters of that, and that's your password. IWLTH25MD. I would love to, and no one will ever guess that. And then at the end, put the first letter of the website. So A for Amazon, F for Facebook, T for Twitter, so that every password is indeed different and yet easy for you to remember.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, we have an emailer, Diana. I'm just going to read the email as it's written because I don't think I understand it. My new iPhone texts are going out as email. How do I change it in settings to have text from my phone number? The option for my number is not highlighted. People don't know it's from me. I'm getting the text. Who's this?
Yeah. So what you do on your iPhone, you go into settings, and in settings, you scroll down to messages. And if you scroll down on that screen, you'll see a thing called send and receive. And this is where you can specify where your texts look like they're coming from. It can be an email address or your phone number. You'll see it right there. Start new conversations from. So what you'll want to do there is select your phone number rather than your email address. So to do that slowly, settings, messages, send and receive, send new message, send new conversations from. So okay. That's how you fix that.
Okay, Diana, remember that next pledge drive.
Okay, wait, I'm still, you go to send and receive. And then what?
And then on the next screen there, scroll way down, and at the bottom it says, start new conversations from. And there you'll see both your phone number and your email addresses.
Right.
So make sure your phone number is the one selected. And now when you send a text, it will come through to the other Apple user as your phone number.
Okay. All right. Yes, Diane, I hope that helps. And just one question before we go to break, one more. Why does Apple require you use Apple cords for their products and you can't use generic cords?
That's an excellent question. It drives me nuts. Apple is the only smartphone in the world, the iPhone, that requires Apple's special charging cable, whereas all the Android phones all use the same USB cable that you can exchange. And the answer is very simple: money. Those cords are expensive. I think they're $30, and Apple sells a lot of them. There's no way around it. Well, actually, sorry, I should correct myself. Just this year, Apple has now allowed other companies to make those Apple Lightning cables, and you can get them for a lot less money. Amazon, for example.
Yeah, I got one for $10 or $12, I think.
$10, that's right. So Amazon's selling Apple iPhone cables for $10, and they're very nice cables.
Oh, okay. We're speaking with David Pogue. He's an award-winning tech expert, and he can help you with your tech problems. He's written Pogue's Basics, and we'll take a short break. Our last break, we'll be right back. And welcome back to Tuesday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and David Pogue, an author and award-winning tech expert. He's written Pogue's Basics, Essential Tips and Shortcuts That No One Bothers to Tell You for Simplifying the Technology in Your Life. Siri, is David Pogue as smart as we think he is?
Let's see.
That's it.
I found this on the web for us. David Pogue as smart as we think he is.
David Pogue's new book reveals tech secrets. The personal web. Oh, well, I guess he is. Okay. David, going to social media, I was surprised when you said Google is great for finding information about things, but Facebook should be our go-to for suggestions. Why?
Because Google is information written by people you don't know, and Facebook is written by people you do know. So if you want a fact, go search it on a search page like Google or Yahoo. If you want an opinion, you ask your friends. So, you know, I had, you know, the kids for a weekend a couple of years ago, and I'm like, where is somewhere drivable from Connecticut that I can take my kids for the weekend? And everyone on Facebook was like, oh, there's this really cool submarine exhibit in Bridgeport. And there's, you know, and somebody's, it happened to be the inauguration weekend for Obama in the second inauguration in Washington. And someone said, you should drive down and see the inauguration. I had never considered doing that. It was such a great idea. So yeah, Facebook is just absolutely great for getting suggestions from people in your circle.
So you just put that in the search for?
I just typed that as my status message, as, you know, as my what's going on with me box. I just typed, hey, who can recommend? Here's what, this one's really important. If you learn nothing else from this interview, well, then it'll have been a really bad interview. But speaking of Facebook, this blew me away. You may not realize this, but there are dozens or hundreds of messages coming to you in Facebook that you've never seen. And they're often really important things. Somebody died that you knew, or somebody's getting married and you're invited. And it's because if you look into the messages area of Facebook, you'll see the inbox, the big list of messages that you see. But there's another tab there that no one ever clicks called Other. And in that other list, it's another inbox filled with messages going back years that you've probably never seen. Now, Facebook did this as a way to prevent spam. They don't want, you know, advertisers filling your email. So what they did was they said, the only messages we're going to show you are messages from your friends. If the message is coming from someone you haven't friended on Facebook, we're going to stick it into this other folder. But the problem is nobody knows that it's there. And so when I wrote a New York Times post about this, and people were in tears. They're like, oh, my elementary school English teacher died, and I never knew.
David, I found just because of reading your book, I found a message from somebody that I hadn't spoken to in so long, but the message was from last June. He probably thinks, and I had no idea, so I just wrote him back saying, I'm so sorry I never got this.
It's exactly right.
It works.
Facebook thought they were doing you a favor, but they're ruining people's lives.
Let's see. We have another. Whoops, he just went off. Whoops, little technology.
What was
problem.
His name?
David.
David, you can call back. We lost your call somehow.
How about using for your camera? Or no, I have it written down here. Oh, you can read Kindle without having a Kindle.
That's right. So the Kindle books are actually great. I went to see the movie Wild last week, and then wanted to read the book, and found out that the book is only $6 in the electronic version. But most people probably think that the Kindle is an ebook reader. It's a, you know, $200 thing that you buy. But in fact, you don't need any such thing to read Amazon's Kindle books. You can read them on your phone. You can read them on a tablet. You can read them on your computer. You can even go to Amazon.com and read them on any device anywhere. So it's important to note that you do not need a Kindle reader to read Kindle books.
And how do we get the Mac to read anything aloud to us?
Oh, man, I love this feature. Yeah, the text-to-speech feature. So you can just highlight the text in any program. Sometimes when I'm getting ready for work or putting on my clothes or whatever, I'll have it read a web article to me. You just highlight it and then go up to the edit menu, and lo and behold, there's a speech command with a subcommand, start speaking, and it will start reading out loud to you exactly what you've highlighted.
Oh, I was going to try that. All right. And let's see. Oh, Al wishes you were a regular guest. Well, maybe we could do something about that.
Sorry, are you hearing that?
No,
sorry.
No.
That's my Mac reading in a funny voice. I was going to.
Oh, what was the voice? Do it again.
You sure you want to hear that? I'm hooked up with a headphone, so I'm not sure you'll hear it. But you have a choice in system preferences of 18 different voices, and there's like women and men and little boys and all kinds of different. And some of them are novelty voices, like that one was talking like an old guy. Like that.
Okay. Going back to Facebook for a second, is there a simple way to set our privacy settings to our liking? Simple is being the operative word.
Yeah, they've come a long way there on Facebook. It's now pretty simple. In fact, I'm trying to call it up, but it's super slow. I believe that if you click your name in the upper left corner, you will find. Okay, no, that's not it. Yeah, it's pretty easy to find. They've simplified it. They've explained it much better. Sorry, it's the upper right corner of the screen on the blue banner. There's a settings command there where all the privacy things, there's a privacy tab and everything is in one place. It's very simple. Who can see your posts? Who can send you friend requests? Who can look you up using your email? So it's pretty clearly explained now, and they've been bashed a lot for leaking privacy things or making it confusing, I should say. And they've come a long way.
And we have that caller that I accidentally dumped. Mickey in Miami, I'm short on time. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Just wondered, is there a phone number for Facebook if you have any problems that you can call?
They don't want you to call them, but there is very definitely a help button on Facebook. And if you click it, it will eventually lead you to people who can answer, by typing.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And by the way, just one last tip that will apply to that and to everybody. Searching is the world's best way to get immediate help tech support. So go to Google or Yahoo or Bing and type in, Canon MD5000 printer won't print, or Microsoft Word crashes when on Pacific time zone. Type in whatever problem you're having. Someone has had it before, and you will find an answer. Think of those search pages as tech support pages. They are amazing.
Okay. Is there a shortcut to remember all your shortcuts?
Yes. PogsBasics.com. Thanks for the softball.
Keith wants to know, I was uploading photos and synced my iPhone and deleted some of my phone contacts. When the deleted contact calls me, it appears. Huh. What's the question?
So, what is the question?
I was uploading photos and synced my iPhone, deleted some of my phone. I guess he's just saying when the deleted contact calls me, it appears. But maybe the question would be, could he get back some of the contacts he deleted?
Yeah, I mean, in theory, your phone is synced to iCloud.com. It's synced online. So a backup of your whole address book and calendar and everything else is stored online. So I guess the simple solution would be to just sync it again with your computer or online. And by the way, do note that in contacts, on the left side, there are two categories. There's one called on this phone, and those are names and addresses that are not also online. And then there's another one that's stored online. So it might be that you just selected the wrong group and you seem to be missing the names, but they're really there.
Oh, okay. Well, David Pogue, an author, award-winning tech expert, the founder of Yahoo Tech, correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning, and a personal technology columnist for the New York Times for 13 years. His latest book is Pogue's Basics, Essential Tips and Shortcuts That No One Bothers to Tell You for Simplifying the Technology in Your Life.
Winner of the Long Title Award.
And your blog again?
So Yahoo Tech is where I write and make videos, and then Pogue's Basics is details about the book.
And we'll have a link to the book on our website as well.
Thank you so much, you guys. That was fun.
Thank you, David. Have a great day.
You too.
And that wraps up today's edition. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical direction from online producer Paul Leary, who you can contact if you have any other tech questions.
That's right.
He helps me out.
And me.
For a charge. And if you missed some of the program, we have free audio archives at our website, WLRN.org. More information, including links, discussion, and photos, at the Topical Currents Facebook page. And tomorrow's program begins with a visit by Luke Zamperini. He's the son of the legendary Louis Zamperini, an Olympic track miler in 1936, and a World War II prison camp survivor. Louis' story was first a biography and now a film, of course, directed by Angelina Jolie. This is Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.